Welcome back, everybody, to the Catholic Traveler Podcast, the daily edition of the podcast, which is taking you through the station churches of Lent in Rome on a kind of virtual pilgrimage. Hi, Mountain.
Hi, Joni.
Hi, listeners. Welcome back. Thanks for coming back every day to hear about the station churches.
Yeah, we're getting close to the end. We talked about that the other day. Kind of sad about it.
We still have a week and a half.
Yeah, I know. But it's been fun.
We haven't talked about the Easter station churches and whether or not we're going to do some of those.
I thought we decided we were going to end on Good Friday.
Oh, we probably did.
Because Saturday is the most boring day of the year, and then it's Sunday. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not Lent anymore. I mean, if we're going to do station churches, we could do the year-round station churches.
That's true.
I think we talked about that in the very first episode, how it's not just Lenten.
We probably did. That's a long time ago.
I know, but we talked about how it's not just Lenten.
Yes.
All year there are different churches.
Yes.
So anyway, no, I've enjoyed like talking about a church every day and our little back and forth banter about things that have nothing to do with the church and food.
Yeah.
And then all the comments. I love reading the comments and people writing to us and saying how much they enjoy it. And then I'll never forget like the chicken gelato story and fish gelato. See, I don't even remember.
There's actually chicken gelato. That was the funny thing. Yeah. I want to take this opportunity to tell people or ask people that, you know, when this is over, we're still going to podcast. We podcast every Thursday and we're going to continue that. And so if there's anything that maybe we've mentioned offhand, maybe you have questions about, maybe we've said some crazy word like apse mosaic or basilica and you're like, what the heck is that? Or just if we've mentioned a church offhandedly and you want to hear more, feel free to reach out to us because we're going to be looking for more ideas. I mean, we were podcasting before this. It's not like we're just going to be like, what do we do now? But it would be nice to hear from our listeners about, you know, episodes they might be interested in. So reach out to us.
Yeah, I think this is our 53rd episode, maybe 52 or 53. Who would have thought?
That's amazing. Yeah. It helps when you do them every day.
It does. But still, when we were in Assisi that day recording the first one and the guy was banging on the wall, who would have thought 50-something episodes?
Thought?
Anyway, today we're going to talk about a church. I like this church.
And I've never been to this church. So why don't you tell the people what church we're talking about?
Really?
I have not, I don't think.
Huh.
I know. Well, because, so I've been talking a lot about the year that I studied in Rome. I studied in Rome twice, but I studied in the spring of 2005 was when I first kind of discovered the station churches. So a lot of my stories come back to that time. And we were on retreat in Assisi this week. So we went on a retreat in Assisi. It was amazing. And then we finished up. Or no, we did Florence and then Assisi. We studied art and architecture in Florence for like 4 or 5 days. And then we went to Assisi and did a retreat in Assisi, then came back for Holy Week in Rome. So, and for the events that would follow, namely the death of JP2. So we were not in Rome during this stretch of the station churches. So I don't think I ever made it to this church, which is ridiculous because there's so many good things about it.
Yeah. And to parents or students that are listening, if you have a chance to send your kid to study abroad or you have a chance to study abroad, definitely do it. Even right now, during the pandemic, we have schools here that are open. There's American kids that are here. It's a different experience than probably when you were here because they can't just jump on a plane on the weekend and go to Greece or something. But man, I wish I had done that. I didn't even know Europe existed when I was in college. It wasn't on my radar at all. And I mean, you've lived it twice, but just seeing the experience that the kids have when they come over, I guess teenagers, 20-year-olds, whatever, that they have, it's amazing. And it's not just like a party. I mean, if you're doing it from the Catholic perspective, in Rome especially, I mean, all the stuff we've been talking about that you can experience and I mean, imagine being able to do that when you're 18, 19 years old and the impact it could have on your faith.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get on a rant. You've just opened the door for something that I feel very strongly about. And we could do a whole podcast about this. But I say without hesitation that that semester in Rome changed my life. And I am so grateful to Christendom College for that experience. And I would never be the same afterwards. And it's just, you get to live Rome like no other pilgrim, no other tourist. And not only that, but you get to experience a completely different culture, and you gain such independence. I read my journal and I think, what were we doing all by ourselves when we're 21 years old? I went to Bologna in the middle of a snowstorm without a hotel room and just showed up in Bologna and didn't even know where to go to find a hotel room. And what was I thinking? Like, my mom must have been so nervous and so scared. But look at the lessons and the stories, and it's just incredible. So we could do a whole podcast about studying abroad. It changed my life, and I don't know why, if you have the opportunity, you would not do it. It will be life-changing.
Yeah, and it's not just like Christendom. That's a Catholic school. Tons of universities that have exchange programs. There's schools in Rome that you can come to just to study for a semester. So you don't have to be at a Catholic school or a Christian school, and you can still get the same amazing experience once you get out of the classroom.
You might have to work harder to avoid the party scene. Find the Christian experience. Yeah. Yes.
Rome, you're surrounded by it. So you just get up early and go out.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember at one of the Station churches, there was a young man with a backpack, and he was at all the Station churches all by himself. And I was writing in my journal about how, like, I felt like, and I probably mentioned him on the podcast, I felt like he was our friend, even though we didn't know his name, because he was at all the Station churches with us, but he wasn't with anybody else. So I have a feeling he was probably studying abroad at, you know, John Carroll or one of these colleges, and just sought out the Station churches alone by himself, and was still part of our community and our experience. And so if you do study without maybe a Catholic college, you can still, you know, search out these experiences. You might just have to work a little harder.
Yeah, there's a lady here right now who is studying art or architecture or something. She's not in a Christian program at all, but she's been going to the Station churches. She's been following along with our posts. And so she's having that experience while she's here. So anyway, do it. I guess we should talk about the church.
What is the church today, Mountain?
San Marcello. And this is right across the street from yesterday's church, Santa Maria in Via Latta. So if you don't recall, this is right on the Corso. That's kind of that main street in Rome that leads up to Victor Emmanuel, that big white monument right in the heart of Rome. So there's tons of churches here, tons of traffic, lots of people. And this church is set a little bit back from the road. Yesterday's church was kind of like right on the sidewalk. So this one actually has a little piazza. So as you're walking by, you can see it looks like a church. It's got a nice little facade. Right now, it's completely covered in scaffolding, so you wouldn't know it was a church at all. And this is one of those churches that places ads on the front for the church. So it's kind of funny. It's like a very Roman thing, I think, that they have a crucifix, which we're going to talk about. So on the outside of the church, you know, you've got this beautiful white marble facade, but they've got a big poster of the crucifix, and it says, like, enter here to see the crucifix. It's just kind of funny.
Oh, so they're advertising what they have, advertising. Okay.
Right. They're advertising the church. But it's like a big billboard. I mean, it's huge. It's just kind of funny. I mean, they want you to come in and see the church. So this church goes back to the time of Maxentius. You know who Maxentius is, Joni?
He didn't like Constantine, and they got in a little tiff.
Brother-in-laws.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is the guy
that... And then went to war with each other.
Right, this is the guy that Constantine fought on the Milvian Bridge, and that's what led to him legalizing Christianity. But when Maxentius was in charge, he arrested the Pope. So Pope Marcellus, and he was condemned to work in stables, basically, until he died. And so he was martyred by working in stables. And this is where that happened. So a church was built over that spot, and now it's called San Marcello.
There's also a connection, and I've never been to this church, so I had to do my little research and figure out what to talk about with this church. But it was interesting. Boniface I was elected here, and he was a little while later. He was 5th century. And then there was an antipope elected at the Lateran, but Boniface was the real pope, and he was elected, and then they had like a papal procession from here. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. You don't hear much about antipopes, but it was here that he was elected, and they had the procession from Marcellus, and they're like, this is the real pope.
Yeah, and speaking of connections, it was Lucina that owned the property where she kind of protected the Pope, and then that was turned into the stables. So she's connected to San Lorenzo and Lucina, which we visited a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So again, all these churches have little connections to other churches. So inside, did you have anything else to say about outside?
Or just the history? No, I have something to say about inside, but you should talk about the most important thing inside.
So inside, there is a crucifix. So in the 16th century, there was this big fire that destroyed the church. Only a few things survived, one of them being the wooden crucifix. So that was considered a miracle that the crucifix survived the fire, kind of like the one at St. Paul outside the walls that survived the fire. But this crucifix was also used in processions during plagues. So during one of the plagues, this crucifix was processed through each individual neighborhood of Rome, ending at the Vatican. And so that kind of plays a role into our current plague, because when the Pope did his blessing almost a year ago now, you may recall it was the first time that he publicly left the Vatican. So there was a picture of him. He got out of his car on the Corso, which again, this is usually packed with buses and cars and people. And you just saw the Pope by himself, I think security or something too, but walking up the this empty, busy street in Rome with the Victor Emmanuel monument behind him, going to the church. And whoever set up that photo op needs a raise, because that was an amazing picture, because they could have pulled in to the piazza, the Pope could have got out of the car, walked right up the steps, but they stopped like a block down the road and had him walk. And it was just such a powerful image to see the Holy Father walking up the street alone, a busy street alone, to visit this crucifix. And that was the first time that I had a little hope. Because remember, it was really bad at the time. It was scary. A lot of things were unknown. And I was really upset that there wasn't anything going on with the church. Like there were no processions like in the old days, or masses had been forbidden to the public. We still had churches, thankfully, unlike many people. So at least we had that. But that day, the Pope went to St. Mary Major to visit a miraculous icon there that kind of has ties to the plague, which we'll talk about when we go to St. Mary Major later. And then this crucifix, which has ties to the plague, and to know that the Holy Father went to these two spots that day to pray for us and to pray for the world, it was like a sign of hope for me. And then a few days later, weeks, I don't remember the timeline exactly, but that's when he did the Urbi et Orbi in the piazza of St. Peter's. Again, great. Like they hired like the best Hollywood
the
crew
same
or something.
Guy, yeah, the same guy staged that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Funny because you think about a lot of Catholic stuff, media stuff. It's usually not that good. You know, we're really good at doing stuff with felt banners and things. No offense to the
cheesy
people
music.
Like felt banners. Yeah, but like they were on point for this stuff, like the candlelights and the piazza and everything. But anyway. It was amazing. But he had with him, he had Monsignor Marini with him, and then it was Pope Francis, and they were the only two out there. And then behind them was that icon from St. Mary Major and this crucifix, this miraculous crucifix. And remember, it started raining, and his little speech or whatever, no, it wasn't a homily, but reflection was amazing.
I was just going to say, everybody needs to go back and look that up and read it again and pray with it. I actually read it almost every month. Like I read it frequently and it's powerful. I think it's probably the most powerful thing he's ever written. But so if people don't remember it, you can go to the Vatican website and look that up. It's incredible. It's his Urbi et Orbi, March 2020. It's incredible.
Yeah. The pictures from that, that's going to be like how his papacy is remembered, no matter how it turns out. Like that's going to be like the image that people remember, because it was such a powerful image. But you may recall there was the rain, and some people were upset because you had this miraculous crucifix out in the rain and it was going to get damaged. But it was already set to be restored. So they weren't really doing anything too irresponsible. And then they did take it to the Vatican Museum Restoration Labs. They restored it. Remember, it's hundreds of years old anyway, so it needed some work. And then it was quickly put back into the church. So it's now, I mean, it was already popular for Romans because it's been featured in other plagues. And I think you had a story as well to talk about. But now when you go into the church, all the pews and all the chairs face the chapel where this crucifix is. There's an altar set up there. There's a tabernacle or anything. So it's not like they're just like facing the wall or something. That's where all the masses are said now for the church, because he kind of brought this crucifix back into light and showed that it's has all this beautiful history and gave us so much hope during those dark days.
Yeah, it was processed through the streets before the Second Vatican Council. And so it's been part of kind of the life of the church in Rome. And then it was also used when John Paul II famously, during the Jubilee year, the first Sunday of Lent, he celebrated kind of this day of pardon where he asked forgiveness for the offenses of the church throughout the years and throughout the centuries. And it was a very powerful moment where the pontiff is recognizing that the people of the church have not always acted like Christ. And it was beautiful. And so that crucifix was used in that liturgy as well.
Yeah. There's also a beautiful Pietà in here. So that's, you know, Jesus and Mary, well, Mary holding Jesus after he was taken down from the cross. This one's in color. It's usually you just see it white marble. So it's pretty cool to see it in color, pretty powerful. And they have all the other typical devotions, Our Lady of Untire of Knots, and a little chapel set up for that. They have John Paul II chapel here. So it's a nice little church. And they always play music, like classical music, which maybe you love it or hate it. Sometimes you like a quiet church, but it's kind of nice to walk in and hear something beautiful sometimes. Sometimes, yeah. Not always. Sometimes I like a quiet church. This church also has one of the oldest baptismal fonts. So it dates back to the 4th or 5th century. It's one of the first ones that was actually in a church, because usually back in the old days, the baptismal chapel or whatever would be outside the church. This is one of the first ones that was built into the church. And so it's actually built into the walls of the church. So that's kind of cool.
Nice. The Pope, so Marcellus, his relics are under the altar, but so are the relics of Pope Vigilius. And Pope Vigilius is one of these popes that no one really knows the story. No, you know, we have tons of popes that...
Yeah, I don't know the story.
Just like, okay, yeah. But he was 6th century pope, and he was actually... You should read Warren Carroll's History of Christendom, because it's incredible. But he tells the story very dramatically of Pope Vigilius, that he was essentially part of a plot to get the papacy by Empress Theodora. And so Empress Theodora was a heretic. She was a monophysite, which it was when we were confused about the nature of Christ and whether he had divine will and human will and divine nature and human nature, but she was a heretic. And so Empress Theodora wanted to establish monophysitism, the heresy, across the whole empire, and she knew she needed the help of the church. And so she actually got Vigilius to agree, okay, if you help me become pope, I will help promote this heresy. So Empress Theodora and Vigilius have the current pope deposed. We don't really know how Vigilius was involved, but it could be kind of sketchy with how this pope was deposed. And then Vigilius was made pope. And so for any of people who know like papacy and know about infallibility and know about the protection that the Holy Spirit gives to the office of the papacy, this is a little concerning, right? Like Vigilius has agreed, when I become pope, I will make monophysitism, which is a heresy, the teaching of the church. So he becomes pope, and then very famously he writes to Theodora and says he will not do it. He cannot do it. And I think it's just such a beautiful, again, if you want to know the story better, you should go to Warren Carroll's History of Christendom. But it's just such a stunning story of the Holy Spirit really protecting the church, not necessarily protecting us from bad popes, because here we have a man who helped depose the pope before him, but that the Holy Spirit is protecting us from error. And it's just a really... So his relics are in the church, and I didn't know that. And so next time I'm in Rome, I'm definitely going to go see the tomb of Vigilius.
And the church across the street.
And the church across the street. So there's also a cardinal's tomb in here that was poisoned by the order of Alexander the VI, speaking of bad popes, but
I don't know if it's the same cardinal, but there's one cardinal who has a tomb here, and he's like relaxing on the tomb. He's like reclining. He's got his head propped up on his arm.
Is he relaxing on like a big stack of books?
I don't remember if there's books.
Oh, okay. Because this cardinal that was killed, his nephew is also there, buried there. And he says he's reclining on books that he donated to the church.
Yeah.
So.
It's kind of a funny thing to see in a church. Like, I mean, because you see sometimes they're sitting on a throne or a chair. Sometimes they're standing or something. But like to just be lounging is interesting.
Yeah. I guess the cardinal is reclining and then his nephew is laying like underneath him on books or something. Okay. I don't know.
There you go.
We clearly need to go and see this, but but yeah. So a good reminder, a good little church reminding us that, you know, what the church has seen in the past is nothing compared to, I mean, what we see today is nothing compared to what the church has seen in the past, right? Heresy, poisoning, you know, but that this miraculous crucifix reminds us that Christ is always with us and Christ protects his church. And it doesn't mean you'll always agree with people in the church. It doesn't mean that the people in the church will always do what you want them to, but that the Christ is with his bride, the church, and that's what matters.
Very good, Joni.
And on that note.
Yeah, on that note, I guess we're done.
Yeah.
Until tomorrow. Tomorrow is a church that I've been to twice, I think. I know you've been at least once. And
yeah, it's a good one. There's a couple neat stories connected to it.
So. Yeah. Small church, nice church, right by Piazza Navona.
Yes.
All right, people. Have a good day.
Okay. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.